There is no better time than the present to explore the lucrative commercial real estate offerings from REEF. Visit reaf.com/investor. Featured on Fox News, Wall Street Journal, Yahoo Finance, and many more. We're not a crowdfunding site. We own and operate all our properties. Come see why thousands of individual investors have decided to trust REEF with their real estate investments. Call us today with any questions. Hedge market volatility with REEF. Open to accredited investors only. Visit reaf.com/investor.
All aboard for Success Express, your business, career, and financial radio magazine. Hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio. Every fourth Wednesdays, we welcome back Ward Heinrichs. He is San Diego's best employment attorney. He really is. Go to bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. But he's on our show. He's been on our show for years talking about what are all the new employment laws in California. And quite frankly, that state has always got a new law or something happening. But, you know, we've seen all these iconic cases happen and fold and, you know, in front of our eyes on TV, whether it was, you know, that Hollywood couple or some other things. And we realized that there's a lot of terminology out there that do we really know how to speak or understand and decipher legally? So we thought Ward needs to be back on the show today on his fourth Wednesday with us to talk about some of these words that we may think we know. And when you're talking with friends, you're like, oh yeah, I know that word. And you just keep acting as though you do, but maybe you don't. I'm just saying. So everyone, welcome back, Ward. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I'm really happy that I can help clear out some of the misunderstanding about legal jargon. Because I know, you know, when I look at other professions, I go, well, I think I know what that means, but I'm not quite sure. And I have to go to Google and find out. Now, you know, we'll just circumvent Google and I'll let you know what it is.
Yeah, because sometimes when you, and I know you have to look at all these different professions because you're an employment attorney. So you're always looking up, oh, what did this restaurant said this about this kind of oven or whatever? Like, what the hell does that mean? You know, so that's how I feel with this, because even the legalese, you can start Googling it. And then my brain just goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And we need Ward, because at least you speak English. Yeah. I understand it. But the legalese in Google land is just not going there for me. It's just like me not being able to pronounce most of people's names, but I've got yours down now. But I think it really was the Hollywood couple that kind of got this thing about, like, what are they talking about?
And so are we allowed to say their names? You're talking about
Amber
Johnny
Heard
Depp, right?
And you have to, and it's still kind of going back and forth. Like, so they keep saying, oh, they may appeal by the state. So let's just go right to that appeal word, because once the jury comes in and says, no, this and this and this, and this is, you know, whatever their little payments they owe each other in the millions, right? How can someone appeal that again? I mean, how long can things be appealed for? And just what is that process on something like this? I mean, the jury's wrong, everyone's wrong.
Now, one thing you got to remember is every state may have slightly different rules on it, but it's generally the same. But time limits may be different from state to state. So, you know, this could vary a little bit. But generally, after you have a ruling, a final ruling in the case, you owe the defendant, you know, in Johnny Depp's case, you owe Johnny Depp $10 million. All right. So the clock doesn't really start running then, at least in California. It runs a little bit afterward until what they call the remittiture is issued, which is like the final notice of the final ruling. It's probably the best way to describe that. So once that's given, then generally you have 60 days to appeal, and that can vary depending on what type of appeal we're talking about. So the time clock starts running, at least in California, after remittiture is issued. Again, basically the final notice of the final ruling. And then you have the right to file a notice of appeal in the appellate court. Mm. You don't have to like file briefs or anything yet. You're just saying, hey, we want to appeal this.
This sucks. We don't agree with it. And you said appellate. Now, I want to say appellate all the time. And Nancy's always trying to tell me.
Oh,
no,
appellate.
It's got nothing to do. It's got nothing to do with apples. Because I want to say.
No. Appellate. Like appellate decision. That's an adjective that describes what type of decision it is. It's one made by the appeal court. And I guess to finish the whole idea is, well, yeah, you have the right to appeal to the appellate court. In California, you have the right then to, if you don't like the decision by the appellate court, go up to the California Supreme Court. So there's two levels of appeals in California, and there can be even more, but I'm not going to get into all the complicated situations where there could possibly be more. But generally, you get a final ruling, remittiture, you let the appellate court, not an apple, appellate court, know that you want to appeal the decision, then they then briefs are filed, and they take, you know, a year or two or how long ever it takes to determine certain cases, and come out with their ruling. And then there's another time clock by which, if you want to appeal it to the California Supreme Court, you may, and you can do that. And then the California Supreme Court may, you know, you may not like what they say. Now, if it's California law, you're done. You can't go any further. The California Supreme Court is as far as you go. But if there's federal issues, you can actually still go to the U.S. Supreme Court. So there'd be another level. And now the federal courts are fairly similar. Usually there's a trial court that makes a final ruling. Then you can give a notice to appellate court, like the Ninth Circuit. You've probably heard of them, the Ninth Circuit Appellate Court. So it goes up to them, and they make a ruling, and then you can go directly to the U.S. Supreme Court on anything from there. Sometimes there are this might get too complicated. Well, let me just finish my idea. Sometimes I've seen where the Ninth Circuit says, hey, this looks like California law, and it's not clear what the California law here is, so we're going to ask a specific question of the California Supreme Court about this issue. So sometimes they actually do cross over and say, hey, there's this issue that's really important in this case. It's California law. Doesn't look settled to us. Please settle it for us. So that's one of the odd little things that can happen in appeals. But generally, you're talking about three levels: trial, appellate level, Supreme Court level.
Wow. So, I mean, can a jury get involved again, like in this case? Like, you know, because it is defamation with those two.
Oh.
Right? And defamation,
yeah.
I mean, it affected Johnny Depp's career and hers. And he just got Disney back for over $300 million. So, so what happens if she does do the big appeal and go, no, I didn't poop in your bed? No, I'm sorry. I had to do that. I can't help it. I'm sorry, but
Okay, fair enough.
No, as soon as someone says they did that, I'm sorry.
Well,
that's weird.
That's not defamation. That's defecation. So
let's make
sure our terminology is good.
And
okay.
I know. And Johnny Depp actually said she made a fecal delivery on his bed. So, like, that's a whole other deal. But,
oh, man,
like,
that's disgusting.
I know.
Okay.
How can everybody not watch this and, like, giggle, right? But it's sad. It's also a very sad thing because I think it could end up back out there again, and the whole spin cycle starts again because it's wrestled up all these, it brings in harassment and all kinds of, sexual abuse, physical abuse, all of that kind of thing, but defamation, as well as that's a business and a career, and that affects numerous people and businesses that are involved in making movies. So I think it's a very interesting case, so she may do that. It's kind of like signing the escrow papers and then hoping everything goes through. You know what I mean? Like, I'm amazed.
When you say she may do that, she may appeal? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, she may appeal.
Well, right. And your first question was, could a jury see it again? And yes, it's possible. Now, all right. If you bring a lawsuit in court, you're supposed to bring all related claims in the same action. So then there are often questions of, well, someone doesn't like what happened in this case, and then they file something else that's very similar. Most of the time, if it's similar enough, the court's going to go, oh, this has already been decided. You can't bring this again, and a jury won't hear it again. If it's far enough afield, it's possible to sue the same person, but it's hard because what the court wants to do is be efficient. So they want to bring in all cases that you have against that party in this one court case, all the issues. You're right. So there are rules that funnel that down and can limit a person from filing another suit. But it's not impossible. It could still happen. But for the most part, it's just one case. And yes, you can appeal it. Now, if you're saying, I lost, I don't think I should have, and appellate court, please say that and then send it back. So the appellate court can do that. They can go, yeah, we agree with you. The trial court made an error, and we're going to send it back. Now, it depends on why they're sending it back. Could be just for a limited thing. But if it's like, we think the whole verdict is off, then the case could be retried.
Mm. And so if she does this, right, and plays appeal, and they say, no, sorry, you did do that, you know what I mean? It's going to be weird, because if you try to get a second round of jury peoples, I mean, they would have seen everything by now. I mean, is there going to be one person in this world that doesn't, well, I know there's people out there, but I mean, in this country, with pop culture being at the top of the list of people's, you know, Googling things, that people aren't going to know all the stuff that went down and not be kind of tainted going in. I don't think you could have a clear jury. You know, Nancy and I were talking about this, and Nancy, and Nancy's not on the show, obviously, right now. She will be next time, but she was talking about the whole thing about a jury being selected. Do the attorneys really get involved with the selection of, I know this goes off of the legalese part, but it is something to understand, you know, selecting a jury, say this gets appealed, and then it's like, okay, we're going to go back again. And the appellate court, however you say, the appellate place.
The appellate, says, there you okay, go. You got so it.
The appellate versus, I'm, you know, we're taking care of a donkey. So there you go, right? It means the appellate. But when it, you know, what if they turn around and say, yeah, you know what, we're going to start this over. And how do you get a jury that's clean and, you know, without a, you know, an opinion, let's put it that way. And do the attorneys get involved in choosing the jury, or is it someone completely outside of the box?
No. Oh, shoot. My phone went off. Let me
see. They want in. They want to know about the jury.
They probably call me about, hey, can I retry this case?
Yeah. Really, it's Amber.
Yeah, Amber. So, all right. So your question again, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought.
No, it's cool. So going back, like if this had to happen and, you know, you'd have to get a new jury, and who's going to.
Oh, the jury selection process. Yeah.
So like in the beginning, who does the jury selection process? I know that's got nothing to do with legalese, but like it is a good question to know, you know, information to understand. And then if they were trying to get another round of this, if they've already, everyone knows about this case now. I mean, really, I'm sure there's someone who doesn't, but you know.
Yeah, they have to be under a rock. All right, so the process is called voir dire.
Wow, and that's a name.
Yeah, well, it's all French stuff. Well, that's French. And it's a process where the attorneys get to speak to the jurors and kind of find out a little bit about their background to figure out whether they might be someone they want to strike for cause. I mean, if they're very prejudicial, you might get them for cause. Or you make peremptory challenges because you believe that maybe this person is skewed away from me. I can't get them for cause, but I just don't want them sitting on this jury. And you have a limited number of those type of what they call peremptory challenges. And for cause is usually pretty hard to get. I've gotten a few, but they're hard to get. Hmm. Now, back in the day, they used to do voir dire for days. That was a really important part. And now, you know, the courts, you know, we have so many cases, so much greater population, la-di-da-da. And so I think what happened was they said, look, unless it's a criminal case, we're going to take more charge of it ourselves, the court, the trial court, and we're going to limit the amount of time that the attorneys can spend on it, because we know attorneys, they love to talk, they love to get into the nitty gritty, and sometimes I just think it's a little bit too wasteful in terms of time. We got cases backed up in this court, so they've really tried to streamline it, at least in California. I think everywhere they've tried to do that. So it used to be a long process. Now it's really a much more abbreviated process. Even since I started, we were allowed to do more voir dire back in the day than we can now. And it depends on the case, too. Certainly certain cases, because of their import and the complexity, they may allow the attorneys more time to do their voir dire. But the courts have taken over a lot of that. As a general rule, the courts have taken a lot of that. But it's still the same thing. It's still trying to figure out where these jurors are in their personality types and their potential leanings and maybe foibles and quirks. And you're trying to figure that out and see how that might play in with your case.
I love that you are really going in no matter what path I'm taking you off course, detouring you on, yet you're still adding legalese into this with your foibles and all these other things. So I'm not pronouncing the other one. I love this. Yeah, okay, so here's the other thing. So we were talking about, their case was defamation. So there's discrimination, defamation. This is something we've talked about on shows forever, right? Discrimination, defamation. So defamation, we kind of all understand that someone just put me down and maybe it's public or something. But when does it actually, where defamation comes in, where you've got a case, and when does it become like somebody?
With 40 years of experience, thousands of investors, a proven track record, and more than $3 billion in assets under management, REEF provides exceptional commercial real estate investment offerings at the click of a button. Visit us at reaf.com/investor. We own and operate all our properties, and that's important because we have skin in the game. Unlike the middleman, you can call or visit us anytime. Hedge market volatility with our lucrative offerings, open to accredited investors only. Visit reaf.com/investor. There is no better time than the present to explore the lucrative commercial real estate offerings from REEF. Visit reaf.com/investor. Featured on Fox News, Wall Street Journal, Yahoo Finance, and many more. We're not a crowdfunding site. We own and operate all our properties. Come see why thousands of individual investors have decided to trust REEF with their real estate investments. Call us today with any questions. Hedge market volatility with REEF. Open to accredited investors only. Visit reaf.com/investor.
Didn't just say something. Like, you could go read reviews on a restaurant on TripAdvisor and someone said, you know, this restaurant sucks. They, whatever, blah, blah, beep, 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 blah, blah, you know, and would that be defamation? You know, when does it, what becomes something like, what goes from an insult to defamation?
Well, that's a fine line. Yeah, that can be a fine line. All right. So defamation is really broken up into two different types. One is libel and one is slander. Libel is written defamation and slander is spoken defamation. And defamation generally is a false statement that is unprivileged and publicized. So that means it's got to be spoken to someone else. So you can say all sorts of bad things in your bathroom by yourself. It's never going to be defamation. It's got to be public, publicized. So the key, though, is it's got to be false. So it's got to be a statement of either true or untrue. And often opinion is brought up. And if it's opinion, that's usually not defamation. You can hold an opinion and declare your opinion, but it's not something that you can, because it's not necessarily false. That's your opinion. But if you say, well, here's why I think this opinion, and you give a fact statement like, oh, I saw this guy run over this cat, and that made me really mad, and it never happened, that would be something that potentially could be defamatory because it's a false statement. He didn't do it. It's been publicized the general public or at least one other person, and it's not privileged. And, you know, there are special situations like there's a litigation privilege. You can basically say anything you want in litigation, and you can't be sued for defamation for it. And there are other privileges too. So that's essentially the definition of defamation.
So people should be careful about social media with their opinions a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, no, so that's publicized everywhere. It's a publication. So, and other people are reading it. So that's a breeding ground for defamation. Of course, there are other issues. I mean, who really said it? Can you track them down? But let's say you can track them down. Then if it's a false, unprivileged statement that does some harm, that's the other thing. It's got to do some harm to the person. If it doesn't really hurt them, mm-hmm. well, maybe, you know, no harm, no foul. But if it's something that calls into question their business acumen, then that would be something that maybe you can sue them on because it's hurting their purse. You know, because you've said this bad thing about them and it's false, it's an unprivileged statement that you've told a bunch of people on the internet, and now the person's making less money because you said it, and it's a lie.
Oh, so that could be someone like an ex-employee, you know, someone who got fired or, you know.
Yes. You know, it's I'm going to say fairly common in employment cases to see defamation alleged.
Okay. And then, the alleged thing. Yeah, that's a word that I think everyone knows. the alleged defecation. Okay, here it is. But it turned out to be true, so we don't have to say that unless she appeals. But let's go back to, you know, so there's defamation in that, and then discrimination, because sometimes discrimination can lead to defamation. And if you're lying, that's a bad deal.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what's interesting about this Amber Heard, Johnny Depp case is...
Well, hold on. Before you go on to that.
Uh-oh.
Discrimination, defamation inside a discrimination case. Now that if it was done in the case as part of the case, that's the litigation privilege that I was talking about. So you can basically say all sorts of lies on the record and you can't be sued by the other party for defamation, or anyone else actually. But you could go down for perjury. I know you're going to talk about that word in a little bit. But anyway, I just want to make that clear that discrimination, that's a lie. Well, if it happens outside of court and not part of a litigation, then yeah, it really could be defamation. But if it's part of a case, and it doesn't always have to be in court, it could be like a letter from one attorney to the other. It could be, you know, a bunch of things that are related to the litigation. That is privileged. So you cannot sue for that.
Okay. I get it. So like you could say, okay, yeah, that could be part of the documentation within the case. But if somebody went out, you know, hey, this person harassed me or said all these sexual things to me and my workplace and decided to put this all over the internet, that would be defamation about discrimination or not, you know, discrimination.
Yes. Assuming it's a lie, assuming it's not true.
Discrimination would be like, hey, we don't want you to work here because you're gay. Now that would be discrimination, right? Or
yeah,
discrimination.
Unless it's a lie and the person's offended by being called gay, then it could be defamation if it's publicized.
What if your boss said to you, "Oh, I just found out you're gay. I don't like gay people, so I'm, you know, firing you." The gay person.
Well, and
turns
let's
around
assume
and,
that the person is gay. Yes.
He's gay and turn or not. Okay, let's do he is or she is.
It's important.
I'm going to get in trouble.
Because if that person is, if you go, I don't like gay people, you're gay, you're fired, and that person is gay, then there's a discrimination lawsuit against them. And in fact, there's also discrimination for a perceived sexual orientation. I think you're gay, so I'm firing you, and they're not. They could still sue for discrimination, but they'd also have a lawsuit for potentially defamation because it's an untrue thing. They publicize it. Now, it's got to be said to someone else. If you just say it to them to their face, that's not defamation. If you say it to other people, then it could be defamation.
Ah, okay. So then if someone gets mad because their employer fires them for saying, oh, you know, whether or not they're gay, but saying you're gay, I'm firing you. And they took that information and put it all over the internet, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, the employer, if he said or she said that, like, who cares? Like, you said it. I'm fired. I don't care. I'm going to take you down on the internet because that's what I have. That's my tool. So, you know, if they didn't say that and the employee said that, the employee is going down, right? Like if the employee.
Right. If the employee told a lie about that and publicized it to, you know, on the internet, and it wasn't true that the employer didn't say that to him, then yes, that could be a defamation case.
Wow. It's interesting because some of these really giant companies have got some really bad backgrounds, like, you know, Nazism, anti-gay, racism. I mean, some serious stuff. Like if you look back at it, and they get boycotted because of people speaking out about it. So it's interesting, you know, and then you wonder, is it true or not? Does the media really stand up and tell the truth? You know what I mean? So you want to always know. And if you do research, some of it's really, really true. There are certain brand names that, but there were also some brands that were totally taken out of context that really hurt their, I mean, I wouldn't buy, there was a fashion and now I can't even remember which name it was because it turned out to not be true that this guy was a Nazi and he wasn't. Like this crazy, like Nazi KKK, I can't remember. Oh,
yeah.
That's how, once it was
and that
fine,
could be defamation.
That's defamation, but it would just, everybody started to just believe it. And so that's it's kind of a freaky thing. You know, if someone just gets pissed and starts saying things like, you know, so-and-so is this and it, you know, and if they are like, you know, evil, then yeah, let people know. Absolutely. But if they're not, man, that can do some harm, you know? So I think when you do this as an employment attorney, what if someone went after the company and it affects the people that stay with a company if the owner is like really seriously bad, like, or not, but it affects the actual jobs because it affects the company's, you know, bottom line, basically. And they start having to, you know, I mean, would that become a bigger lawsuit? I know I always go off track here, but it's important. If someone goes off and says, okay, this guy who owns this company is a racist and blah, 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 and then people don't buy their product or service, and then they start to go down because of it, obviously, like that could be a defamation lawsuit. But if would the employees have a right to sue if it is not true? Sue the people that started
No. Well, no. The person who's defamed has the right to sue. Now, maybe a slight variation of that, and I actually don't have an answer for this, would be, well, what if you defame a company?
Yeah.
And then that hurts,
that's
you know,
I mean.
everyone in the company. I'm going to guess that the board of directors has a cause of action. Maybe a CEO does. I don't think the individual employees do, but I'm not sure.
We're going to have to do a show on defamation. We'll have to do that. Defamation and discrimination. It just sounds like a good show. I think we just have to do a whole
D&D.
Topic. Yeah, the D&Ds, right? It's better than D&D. All right, so we'll just call it Dynamite. All right, so discrimination, defamation. Discrimination, though, that is discrimination because I already messed up a little bit and went into harassment. So discrimination is different than harassment, right? Or is it the same?
No, it's different. Here's one of those types of claims that has different laws throughout the country. Each state will have different laws. And they're all, you know, pretty similar, pretty related. And the United States has, you know, discrimination laws too. But they at least in California, they differ in many significant ways than California does. There's just a myriad of different ways that they differ, but they're basically the same. It's going after the same type of potential wrongdoing. And now the difference between discrimination and harassment is picking on someone, you know, giving them a hard time because they're in a protected group. And mm-hmm. in California, I forget the number, 14, 15, 16, a bunch of groups now that are protected. So one of them is based on sex. One of them is based on nationality. One of them is based on race. Or I think race and nationality are all put together. But there are defined groups against whom, if you harass, because they're in the defined group, now that's the key. You can harass anyone as long as you're not doing it because they're in a protected group. So and sometimes it gets very gray. I mean, why are they doing it? Are they doing it because they're in a protected group? Are they doing it just because they saw this person kick a cat and they don't like them? And, you know, if they kick a cat and don't like them, that's why you're harassing them. Well, that's, you know, that's not discrimination. It's got to be, it's the activity, the harassment, I guess we were talking about, the harassment has to be because they're in a protected, defined group in the statute. California has a bunch of them. The United States, Title VII has a bunch of them. But it doesn't mean that all harassment is barred in the workplace. It's not. It depends why the harassment's done. If it's done because they're in a protected group, then that's illegal. And discrimination is similar, but it's really talking about the actions that are taken, not just harassment, but you know, like terminations and demotions and extra punishments and things like that. That's discrimination. You're not harassing them. You're just firing them.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like this, so I'm just going to slowly. You're ghosting someone in a really bad way, in a work way. You know what I mean? It's like you're just kind of squeezing them out. You know, it's like, I don't like this, so, you know, just, yeah, moving them out the company. It's rough, man. That's rough. So,
and let me throw in one more legalese for you.
Yeah.
We call those acts where you're, you know, firing or demoting, adverse employment action.
Is your money working for you? The best way to hedge volatility and inflation is investing in commercial real estate with REEF. That's REAF.com/investor. Skip the crowdfunding sites and invest directly with REEF. REEF owns and operates each investment, cutting out the middleman and providing investors with exclusive off-market deals. There is no better time than the present to explore our lucrative portfolio of commercial real estate. Open to accredited investors only. Visit REAF.com/investor. Is your money working for you? The best way to hedge volatility and inflation is investing in commercial real estate with REEF. That's REAF.com/investor. Skip the crowdfunding sites and invest directly with REEF. REEF owns and operates each investment, cutting out the middleman and providing investors with exclusive off-market deals. There is no better time than the present to explore our lucrative portfolio of commercial real estate. Open to accredited investors only. Visit REAF.com/investor.
Ooh. Okay. Adverse employment action. So they're acts.
So if you do an adverse employment action against someone, that is discrimination against someone because they're in a protected group.
Okay. So now someone's like really pissed someone off at this point, whether it's harassment, discrimination, defamation, and you go, okay, it's time for, this is going to go to trial, right? Or it's going to go to court. Someone's going to get sued. This is now a lawsuit, right? So there's all of that. There's class actions. There's all these different ways of doing it. But before we get there, sometimes isn't there mediation? And then, like, what is the difference between mediation and arbitration? Is arbitration like one up of mediation before an actual lawsuit, or is arbitration part of a suit? I feel like now we have to have a hamburger.
All right. I'll talk about arbitration first, and I'll talk about mediation. Arbitration is really a form that's used instead of going to court. You select an arbitrator. Maybe it's even a group of arbitrators. It depends on how you want to do it. And that person that is selected, let's say you just select one arbitrator, that person hears the evidence and makes a ruling. Just like a judge would or like a jury would.
Oh.
And so it's instead of getting a verdict in court.
Oh, wow. So that saves people money, right? And defamation.
Well, that's an interesting question. Actually, it's more expensive. because you got to pay for the arbitrator. You don't really have to pay for the, you don't have to pay for the judge. That the he's on the state payroll, so the state or county pays for them. And so, you know, people, there's this perception that it's cheaper, but ultimately it really isn't cheaper, but it can have advantages of being maybe quicker, more, less formal, and you don't have to wait in line with all these other cases that the judge is hearing. You could be maybe, you know, the only one or very few that the arbitrator has, or at least the arbitrator has a schedule where you're going to be, you're going to go to the arbitration in a relatively short time. But honestly, generally, it's really more expensive.
Wow. Because even, you know, I was even thinking like, okay, here's this defamation trial with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, right? And then, you know, because this whole thing was so public, like, isn't that in a weird way defamation in itself, even though it's in pursuit of justice, right? And to clear up defamation, in a way, we as the public, you know, whether we had the choice to tune into it or not, or if it comes on the news, you could hit mute, sure. But in a way, this now, it's good when justice is served, but along the way there, all the things people had to listen to, didn't have to, but what was out there, I thought was defaming in its own thing. Like, we do laugh about the defecation thing, and yet that is actually a psychological problem. That is a sad thing, that she needs help, you know, from my opinion, okay? I don't know everything, but from my friends who are in therapy, like, that's someone who needs help, or who run, who are therapists, I should say, not in therapy. Not that there's anything wrong with therapy. By God, am I going down a hole, Lord, help. But
yeah, well, I can talk about mediation if you want.
I know, we still want to talk about that. But in a way, isn't that defaming yourself by going out?
Well, no. Because again, there's the litigation privilege. It's not an unprivileged statement. So anything that's said in court is privilege. It's not defamation. Although it's tawdry, it's sensational. And if it was said out of court, maybe it would be defamation, but said in court, so it's not.
Do you know how many people made money on YouTube just rehashing the court? Because they would sit and watch through all the boring stuff and then cut out the sensational bits and then do their own little opinions and put it on YouTube. Do you know how many people made money on that? It's amazing. It's like, it was a, you know, a money-making
thing. Yeah, I would question really in that make, case, but... is that privilege by litigation, because it's really, the privilege really lies with the litigants. It doesn't lie with people outside. I'm pretty sure now, maybe I'm getting in areas that I really don't know about, but if you learn something through the litigation process and you're, you know, very removed from it, you see it on TV, and then you go, oh, that's crazy. And then it's not, maybe it's clearly false, even though it was brought up in litigation and put on the news. And if you repeat that falsehood, at that point, does the litigation privilege still work? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I would think maybe not. But then again, they're public. So, you know, public stuff that's already been released in the public. Anyway, it's all sorts of ins and outs there.
It's a weird, it's just one of those landmark cases, right? That, like, O.J. Simpson trial, Bill Cosby. I mean, there's just certain cases that happen that you go like, holy cow, man, this is just, people do weird stuff, man. We do weird stuff in and out of offices too. It's not just, you know, in, you know, nice fancy houses. You know, it happens in workplace situations, all of it. It's pretty crazy.
Absolutely.
But mediation was something that they did try. Like, they were saying, let's do this mediation kind of thing. Didn't seem to work for them. So mediation, isn't that like a nice step before a whole bunch of money goes out and time? And isn't this kind of thing where what they did, I'm just using them as an example, Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, exhausting on both parties and everybody involved. I mean, because they brought in tons of people as witnesses, like tons, right?
Yeah, no, it's a long, drawn out, not fun process.
Yeah, no doubt. So for when you look at, I'm going to go back to the employment law for employees, employers, isn't it sometimes better or, you know, there's always a time, right? But mediation is when, I mean, do you get involved with that part? Do you help?
All the time. Mediation is really common. Super, super common. When I first started practicing, mediation was just coming into its own. And you would meet trial attorneys who had maybe several hundred trials under their belt because you didn't mediate. Then they said, hey, look, you know, this going to trial all the time and litigating heavily all the time does cost a lot of money. And maybe it's better to see if we can get an agreement earlier on. And it could be either before or after you sue, but it's very common either way. You can do it before a lawsuit's filed, and you can do it after, and both are done. But it's an agreement by both parties that say, we want to try to see if we can settle this case. And we're going to hire this guy called a mediator, guy or gal, excuse me. There are many women who are mediators, good mediators. Who to help us go through the process and help us come to an agreement. So that's what mediation is. And it will save you money rather than going to trial. And there will be some type of agreement reached if the parties want to. They don't have to. But if they reach agreement, then their litigation costs will stop at that point.
Okay.
But if one of them says, hey, look, I don't like this final deal that the mediator is trying to say we should both take or offering to us, I'm not going to do it. Then you still have the right to go to trial after that and continue litigating. And, you know, I maybe have misled you and the public a little bit on the cost of arbitration and litigation. Litigation would be, you know, in state courts or federal courts. The problem, arbitration, I think, has a lot of costs built into it that civil or criminal cases don't have. And that is, you've got to pay for you don't have to pay for a judge, you have to pay for the person, you have to pay for the process, for the arbitrator, you got to pay for them, and you have to pay for the process and do some other things. And they kind of nickel and dime you all the way through. So there are those costs. But they say, hey, we're more efficient. We can get this done more quickly. And then what that does is reduce the attorney's fees. So there is some truth in the claim that arbitration costs less because if it really is more efficient, and I'm going to say often it is, it's not always, then you will save money in paying for attorneys. So it could end up being less costly. But not necessarily. So that's where I want to leave the arbitration. But mediation is really an agreement. It's an agreement to have to go to before a mediator and see if we can settle the case.
Okay. So now when you have class action, which is also a word on there, because when we see class action, how many of us are getting these emails or things in the mail going, if you were part of this, you may get 20 cents or something, or you see the ads on TV, you know, and you may get more. I mean, it really depends on what it is, right? And
it does.
And I just want to say that is one of the hard things. We're doing the legalese, but there's so many. I mean, every time you're on a show, there's like 20 things, ways to look at something. And that's the beauty of the legal system and good accountants and good attorneys. You guys are all creative geniuses, and we need you in the world. And that's why you get to charge.
Well, thank you.
That's right. No, but it's true. I always say when people like talk about creativity, I'm like, dude, it's not just artists and musicians and writers. You got to look at your accountants, your tax people, you know, you got to look at them, your bookkeeper. They all have to have creativity. And it's the same with an attorney looking
at
different lights. Right. And so like we could take one word and just do that as a show, and it, you know, because there's just different ways and different scenarios and situations, because everything is different. But I do want to bring up class action. I know we've done a show on it before years ago, but so class action, I mean, we look at right now, there's all this talk also about coming up with more, we were talking about this the other day on a show with you about having, you know, just kind of the union thing. And I'm going, well, if there's a problem, why not just have a class action? Do we need unions now? Maybe we do. I don't know, because I'm not in that situation. But some situations sound like a union would give some kind of like a the mediator kind of thing, go in and say, hey, you ain't treating these people well, you're not paying them the right way, or, you know, I don't know, whatever is going on. I know Amazon's had some ripple effects, Starbucks, you know, certain big names have had it. But when, I mean, in a way, if there's something affecting a whole workplace, like someone big like that, why not just go, wouldn't that be a class action where you all the employees stand together? Or is that not what a class action
yeah,
is?
Yeah, well, it's a class action is what we call a type of representative action. It's where it's a vehicle. It's really a thing of procedure, a vehicle that's used to have a few people bring claims in their names for a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. So you have what you call have named representatives in class actions, and they're the ones that have their name on the complaint. So you may have two, three, you may have 10, you know, it kind of depends, may have only one. And they're saying, I'm a member of this class of all hourly employees who work for Macy's. And I haven't been paid overtime. And I know that the other people that I work with who are hourly employees for Macy's haven't been paid overtime either. And I've also heard that there are other stores that have the same problem. So we're going to sue Macy's on a class action basis, and we're going to recover all of our unpaid overtime. And I don't mean to defame Macy's. I'm just using them as an example. But that's what a class action is. It's a representative action where a few named plaintiffs, one or more, say, we're a member of this class, and we're representing everyone in that class for these claims.
Oh, everybody in that class. See, that's the important thing. So wouldn't be so. In other words, yeah. Like when you see, so when we see the commercials on TV, did you have this because you ate this, or you were told to take this drug, and now your hair is falling out? Like call this number because there's a bunch of people with their hair falling out from this drug when they said it wouldn't happen. So yeah, that's your class.
That would be a class action.
That's a class. Your hair falling out is that is your class. You know what I mean?
Now that's a consumer class action. Oh, it's different than an employment class action. Okay. And you mentioned that, well, you get 20 cents, and that's usually on consumer class actions, like, you know, Jiffy Lube didn't change your oil, right?
Yeah,
did that
exactly.
So you get $20.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't
Thank
even bother
Facebook
to sign up for those.
I got my Facebook thing that I could only do online, and it wasn't enough to do anything online.
Yeah, then you're just not going to worry about it.
No.
But employment class actions, I've done, you know, a fair number of those. In my past, I haven't done one recently, but the damages are usually much better. Well, certainly better than $20, but maybe someone worked for them a very short time and they're only getting $20. But people work there for a while, you know, you're going to see damages that are worth going after, worth saying, hey, I'm a member.
Right.
I want to get paid.
Yeah. And can you work with a union for a class action suit? Or if a union's there, does that wipe out the class action suit?
No, you certainly can work with the union. Now, so union really is just a group that represents the employees, and maybe it's just a certain specific subset of employees. I mean, not all businesses have all unionized people. Sometimes it's just the hourly people and not the salary people, et cetera. You know, there's different ways of dividing up, but it really is just. We're going to form this group. We're going to elect some people at the top of this group to run it, and they're going to go in and bargain with our employer for our benefits. That's really what a union does. Now, does that mean that if they might want attorneys to help them in a class action? Yeah, certainly they might, and you might work very closely with them. Now, I never have. I've never had that kind of class action, but I'm sure there are attorneys out there who have. But a union could kind of undercut it, too, and they could say, well, look, we know all these problems are going on, so why don't we just take care of it now, you and me, you employer and me, and, you know, maybe you have to pay them some back pay. So they might work out an agreement by themselves. It's possible.
It's a different form of mediation in a way, right?
It's not litigation. That would be more like mediation. Mediation is just getting an agreement. That's all it's about. A union might be able to do that, but if it went to litigation, and it's possible the union could also hire attorneys or use their own in-house attorneys to do a class action, that's possible too. But it wouldn't be uncommon, put it that way, for a union to work with class action attorneys to right a wrong within the union ranks.
Okay. Okay. This is interesting, though. I mean, when you think about it, so as an attorney, you go in, okay, so like, you know, hey, it's Pride Month right now. So we look at it. So someone in this company gets put, let's just put this whole together. So we have a lot more words and there's no way we're going to get through them all. So right now we've done pretty good on covering what different cases are, right? Discrimination, defamation, class action, all that kind of thing. But I'm mm-hmm. got a couple more in there. So in other words, board, we're going to have part two. Once you go into court, like this is the nitty gritty, perjury, you know, damages, cross-examination. We have to hearsay, like what, like in an objection, like sometimes nobody even gets a sentence out. There's three objections and two words were said on the other side. Like, what's the point? You know what I mean? So like, I think we're going to have to do part two on once you're in the courtroom of understanding what those words are. But going back, like I said, it's Pride Month. So when you think about discrimination on gay people in workplaces, right? So what, I mean, transgender, right? It could happen. It could be, okay, this is, it could happen class action in a large company, right? So when it's a class action, do you, you said one or more, would three people in a company make sense to do a class action? Or does it really have to be like 100 or like?
Okay. There's, again, class actions really just a procedure for bringing claims on behalf of a bunch of people. And so you have to meet the requirements of that procedure. And one of them is called numerosity. Now, I mentioned, you know, one or two or three people as class representatives.
Okay.
So you only need one, but you can have as many as you want, really. There's no limitation on that. But in terms of meeting the what we call numerosity, the number of people in that group, the mm-hmm. total number, not just the people who are on or who are suing directly as representatives, my rule of thumb was always you have to have at least 25. If you don't have 25, then there's just no way you're going to have the judge is going to allow your class action to go forward. And that's even low. So you have to convince the court that the wrongs that need to be righted have happened enough that this class, that the case should go forward as a class.
Mm.
So if you, yeah, there was one case I read, and I don't remember the name of it, where it had 16 members of a class and the court approved it. So it's possible. But, you know, normally classes will be made up of a much larger group. Now, when I say much, I think the largest one I ever did had maybe 500 people in it.
Oh my God!
Oh no! There's one where we had thousands.
No, are you kidding me?
It might
that
be 5,000.
You have to
keep
up. Wow! And so, but you don't all go marching into the same court. See, this is the other thing. So here you've got all these people. That's a lot of people, right? To think about.
Well, but they don't have to go to court now. The reps are taking care of all the stuff up front, and then what you have to do is give notice to the rest of the class as to what's going on. You know, here we've come to a preliminary agreement. The court has said it's okay. Here's what it's all about. If you want to join in, tell us you want to join in. So you got to send these notices out. And if you do, then we're going to go to final approval and have the court give you, and we estimate the amount of money, or, you know, try to approximate as best you can, give you something like this, or the class is entitled this. And then the judge makes a final ruling and divvies, you know, either approves the settlement or doesn't. And then the money is divvied up according to what the court approves. So that's the process. That's a class process. But none of those people, well, not always. Most of the time, the only people who will have really anything to do with the litigation are the class representatives, the people who actually put their names on the complaint.
The initial,
and everyone else will just get notices. It's not unheard of to depose other people in the class. But in my cases, that never happened.
Okay, so what if
it was only the class reps and you know, offices in the company, that kind of thing. But it's not unheard of to try to depose someone else, another employee who might be a member of the class, but it's fairly rare. It doesn't really happen. Mostly they get a notice and they either accept it or reject it.
Okay. So the more you have, is it kind of like petitions, right? You want to have a change be made, and or some things, there's a wrong in the world. And so people start out like on change.org. Oh, I'm going to get this petition going and it's going to go here. So it's kind of like when you think about the more signatures you have, the more you can say to the muckety mucks, like, hello, this is serious because we have like thousands of people who signed this and said, this sucks, right? So please make this change. But if you only had 10 people, your clout isn't as big.
That's part of the final approval process. You have what's called a preliminary approval, where the judge goes, this sounds okay. Now send out your notices and see what everyone says. And if you get a low, what we call response rate, so let's say, you know, 3% of the people said, we want in, then the judge is hard pressed to say, well, let's keep this as a class. You know, no one's interested. If, you know, 50% of the people say, of the members of the class say, yes, we want in, then there's much more impetus for the judge to say, look, this is a good class. We're going to divide the money up according to my final ruling, which essentially matches what we had discussed at the preliminary approval.
Wow. I didn't even know there was all
that. So response rate is important.
Wow. Wow. So it's a lot of work, but it's worthwhile if there's something really big like that, that has affected so many people. You know, I'm glad I'm not doing the
paperwork. Well, like you said, you know, if it's a consumer class and you get $20, well, you know, maybe you're not interested. You know, if it's, in the employment cases that I had that were class actions, people got chunks of change. And, you know, maybe a few $100 for some people, but some people got thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're not going to turn that, even a couple $100, you're not going to turn away, I don't think. I wouldn't. I'd go, why not? I'll go out to dinner.
At this point, we want gas money. Everybody wants gas money, so bring it.
Right.
But really, going through this kind of thing, you know, everybody puts themselves out there. It's out on the line. A lot of times, don't these kind of lawsuits, and not just class action, just something that goes to trial that ends up in the Supreme Court, can't this create legal change in the system, in the legal system of creating new laws or getting rid of laws or things that were written down in law? I mean, going through these cases.
Well, class actions often bring about new court precedent. And one that recently happened was the United States Supreme Court said that the Federal Arbitration Act preempts the California law that was passed, that was decided by the California Supreme Court, that said our Private Attorney General Act claims cannot be preempted by arbitration clauses saying that you can't bring these as a representative action. So that's what California Supreme Court said, but the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, the Federal Arbitration Act trumps that. And it also says that if you want to have in your arbitration agreement a clause that prevents people from bringing class actions, Private Attorney General Act claims that are also representative actions, class actions are representative, so are PAGA claims, then that arbitration agreement will be upheld that clause that prevents those representative actions will be enforced. Hmm. So there's new law on that.
There's a new law. Boom. So it's not always about money. Sometimes it's just about justice, right? It's justice and money if someone needs to get the money back. So there's, both. I think money is always somehow swimming around there in the world of law, right?
How else do you pay damages?
You brought up the damages word.
Someone gets hurt, and you know, how much is that worth? We do our best to approximate the value, but shoot, if your leg gets cut off, wouldn't you rather have that leg than the $10 million? I think most of us would say, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For me, heck yeah. I want to still go up and hike up that mountain and have my wine with the eagles, you know. I'm just saying.
Right.
That's like, that's epic. Yeah. You know, Ward, we are going to have to do part two of this, which is cool because I think it is more than just understanding a word. It's actually understanding law. And when you are in, I don't want to say in trouble with the law, but maybe you are like as an employee or an employer, and you're really great at running a manufacturing company or a restaurant, or you're really good as a server in the restaurant and running the floor of the manufacturing company, whatever it is, understanding the laws, that's not our thing, right? That's Ward's thing. But if something is unjust, you've got to kind of dip your toes in the legal water, and it's really confusing. I'm sorry, but Google isn't doing it for me, Ward. But
yeah, well, that's one reason why you have to have a good attorney.
Yeah,
we'll explain it to you.
Yeah, because it's more than just here's what the word means. This is actually what the laws and all the things around it. So I love this. I hope we keep doing this. You know, I know we're gonna have to do the PAGA thing you mentioned, the arbitration side. That's gonna be next on the show coming up in July, but. I hope we keep doing these kind of things because I think it really helps us all kind of understand in our situations and workplaces and as business owners, management, that we keep fostering that understanding because everybody's in a different situation at a different time. You know, I know we talked about class action lawsuits a few years ago, but don't ask me, you know, you have to keep in it, you know, to understand
right.
it. So,
no, absolutely.
And things change, they're changing all the time. I mean, even, you know, how different terms. I mean, one day you're a stewardess and next time you're a flight attendant, you know, so is it defamation to say the wrong? No, it's not. Or discrimination to say the wrong thing to your flight attendants. You know what I mean? So there's all these little laws and things that we all have to keep going. But everyone, I encourage you to go to bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. Ward's got a great blog. You can also find his podcast there as well as on Blend Radio and TV.com. He's got his articles there too. And follow him on Twitter. He's on Facebook. And sometimes he hangs out on Instagram, but mostly Facebook and Twitter, right? Those are your main two social media places. And LinkedIn. We got to say LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
Right?
Yeah, LinkedIn is the big one.
Business place. Yeah, yeah. So keep up with Ward there. And of course, keep up with us at BigBlendRadio.com. Ward is on every fourth Wednesday. So thank you so much, Ward.
Oh, my pleasure, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.